Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Joseph Middle.
Swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shekels.
Aldi.
Million
rubli.
Tribesperson.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor Winners at War for Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Guss, here to talk about the penultimate episode of the season. There is 1 week of Survivor left for a very long time, which is depressing but also exciting. It's all the emotions. And to talk about a big 2 hours that we watched this week, I have an Australian Survivor all-star, a super strategist, someone who I expect to come in with a lot of insights and maybe a lot of PTSD from what we saw in this episode. It is the great AK Knight. AK, how are you doing?
Hello, Shannon. Thank you for that intro.
I was going to say you can't spell PTSD without AK, but... You can, but maybe you shouldn't after what we saw with Tony in this episode and how similar it was to David. I was getting a lot of messages about the similarities.
Oh, God. Maybe you should ask Sean about that reference rather than me.
Yeah, I mean, Sean or Sarah. This is what it's come to. Like, at the end when Sarah was saying, I want to show my son I can go against stress, I was like, I'm going to go get a hard drink right now because I can't again take this. You know, a couple of months down the track, I'm not recovered.
It's just one of those things in Survivor, you just cannot plan for stupidity.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah.
Well, Sarah's a good player, you know.
And she's a great player.
What is this mentality that gets into players? I guess we'll talk about it, but just like, well, you feel you need to go up against the best. You know, it's winners at war. Whoever you've beaten, you beat the best at large, like just win the game. But there's this sense of like, I want to prove something to someone, like you've proven by winning, and I'll never understand it.
Totally. And I feel like, before any players go out and play Survivor, they should just watch Spencer's grilling to Woo at the final tribal council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Spencer ended up going to the end with Jeremy, you know, eventually, and that was crazy.
Okay, super fan, don't like shut me down.
I'm just saying that like no one's immune to it. Spencer should know more than anyone, and he just had the wrong read.
Don't use my own thing against me.
But it is a crazy thing that these great players can make these like fatal mistakes, and I think maybe we're watching that with Sarah right now. Maybe we're watching her make a fatal mistake, which is obviously a big thing we'll talk about in this episode. But AK, otherwise, how are you going in the midst of everything we're going through right now?
I'm doing all right. I've as you know, I work 2 jobs. One job I have lost, the DJing, due to COVID, but the other job has ramped up probably 50%. So, well, it comes and goes, and you know, it's all full. It all comes full circle. So, I'm not one to complain. I just hope everyone's doing all right.
Yeah, and hopefully, kind of getting back to normal within, you know, a good time frame. I think it's what we all hope for everyone. But yeah, so we've had Winners at War at least to get us through the isolation. As a super fan, have you enjoyed the season so far? Because it's more contentious than I would have thought. I'm loving it, and I don't hear that from everyone.
Oh, no. I think it's great. If I had to rank it without probably thinking too deeply, I'd have it somewhere between 10 and 15 at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see good big characters. whether they're in the direct game or not. But I know there's a nice nostalgia about seeing some of our favourites back on screen.
Yeah, I mean, some people don't like the boot order. Some people don't like, you know, the Whispering at Tribal, some of the advantages, Edge of Extinction, and I hear them there, you know, some editing. For me, like, I just love it so much because of it, their legacy and the just it's how huge it is. I mean, the recap at the end, which is another thing we'll talk about, which was kind of funny, but it was epic. Like, when I was watching it back, I was just thinking, the reason that this is so above everything for me is just because how often do you get these 20 winners all in one place? Like, to me, that's so legendary, and it couldn't not stick the landing because this cast makes anything work.
Yeah, that last 10 minutes, it just made me want to watch the final episode straight away. It's like a UFC fight when they do all the promos for it. It gets you really, really worked up for that fight, and you feel like you want to root for someone. Although we've been watching for X amount of weeks already, I just found it so cool to see little highlights of everyone from Edge and, you know, how they want to get back into the game. They haven't been sitting on the edge for that amount of time not to find their way back in the game. I did find it weird that we didn't hear from Boston Rob in that time, though.
Yeah, oh my God, I didn't even realize that. You're right. Where was the Boston Rob content? We got it all from Amber. That never happens.
which I loved. Like, yes, let Amber be the spokesperson of that family.
But the reason that it made you hype up to watch the finale is because we always get this content right before the finale. Like, we get it at the beginning of the finale, the recap. You know, because you would think that, okay, if you're turning on the finale, let's give you a little recap, see where we're at. Not like, you know, 2 hours into this episode, like, you probably know what happened if you're 2 hours into the penultimate episode. So I love the recap. I actually thought, like, it was great content. I enjoyed it better on a second watch because the first watch, I was just laughing at how random it was. I had thought the entire episode, due to the weird pacing of all of this double episode, that we were going to get the challenge. I was talking to Mike Bloom. He was like, we're just going to get more camp stuff. We had a bet going on it, and neither of us called season-long recap. So it was just a funny way for that to go.
Yeah, when's the last time we actually had, like, a full episode recap? Was that Samoa?
Yeah, I don't actually know when we had, like, because I was thinking, because they always have this type of thing at the beginning of the finale, but it's usually just what they did at the end, where they sum up like, the people in the finale, rather than giving the whole season recap. I couldn't remember exactly when that stopped. I do think the season deserves a season recap because it has been epic, and maybe there isn't time in the finale, but it just felt like, you know, like, if you're at the end of this 2 hour episode, I feel like you know what's up. If you happen to turn on the TV next Wednesday night in America, maybe you want a little refresher. Well, you should have watched it this week. Like, it's very confusing for the casuals.
I think we'll still get it. I think we'll still get the rundown of the five left in the game. Yeah, oh, just a little one.
Okay.
Surely. Oh, how badly I wanted that. But yes.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it would be funny if they do another recap. Like, because the whole thing about the season is, like, there's been no time, and they haven't even been able to show the votes, and they haven't been able to show anything, and there's been no previously on, like, not a second to breathe. And now they were like, we have 15 minutes to just, like, do what we want. And I was like, it's such a change of pace, and I was not ready for that.
We're gonna rip out an entire reward challenge, but we're gonna show you 10 minutes of the people on the edge.
I would have enjoyed if they were like, all right, we have 7 minutes left. We're gonna give you that pizza reward challenge from the pre-merge. We're just gonna give you, maybe we'll go back to the Whispering at Tribal, we'll subtitle it. Like, the things you've been missing, we'll do that. Now that we just have 15 minutes to fill with anything we want.
Do you know what I am actually really hyped about next week? And this is nothing to do with the people left in the game. I'm so keen to watch the Ponderosa.
Yeah.
I loved it last time they did it for Edge of Extinction, with all of them coming back and sharing that first meal together. And you see it's slowly setting into people that it's over, and seeing the difference between the way, like, David was handling it to someone. Who was the teacher? Ron, just to see the difference in how, you know, people take. I'm so interested to see next week's Ponderosa, considering everyone's already won before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna hand in my super fan card and say I actually did not watch that Ponderosa series. I was so angry at Edge of Extinction and that finale when it happened that I was like, I genuinely just don't want. I listened to all the deep dives, but I was like, I'm not going to consume more content than I feel that I need to about this thing that, like, truly, truly made me upset. Maybe I should go back and watch that now that Isolation is here and we don't have a lot else to do, but I'll definitely check it out for the Winners of War.
That Ponderosa was a big reason I said yes to returning.
Why?
So, I don't know, it felt very wholesome, and I reached out to David afterwards and, you know, sort of flirted the idea about returning and what it meant and would I do it or not and what to expect. And yeah, that Ponderosa just, I don't know, it's really cool. You have to watch it.
How do you have
your own podcast on Survivor and not watch a Ponderosa?
Well, to be fair, I mean, I didn't do any content about, like, the Edge of Extinction finale, and I was just, like, quietly seething. So, I was just kind of done with that season. I think that speaks to how much I love the Edge of Extinction. But for Winners of War, I watch every bit of content. Maybe I'll go back just as, like, a completionist. That's, like, probably some of the only Survivor content I haven't consumed in the last few years. So now I feel bad about it.
No, I was going to say.
Who would have thought you would bring it up on a podcast, like, a year later?
Yeah, and look at me questioning you and your...
Yeah, no one will not matter. No one will know if I don't watch this content. Yeah. A year later, you're like, so this very specific niche online content is
exactly
what informed my entire Survivor experience. You know what I'm talking about? And I'm like, actually, for that, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there's got to be a first for the 100 hours of content you've given us over the last 3 days. So,
okay, well, I hate myself now. So this is a great start to the podcast.
Awesome.
Okay, I want to talk about the episode. Let's start at a pressing similarity. So we've got Tony. I had made the comparisons on the voicemails last week comparing him to David, these like two unicorns who should not get as far as they do. And then this episode was too similar for me. Like vote 7 and 6, which is where I think Sean and Mo should have made the move against him the most. With one idol, no attempt to flush it. He makes it through both rounds. With the idol, David at least was targeted by you guys at 7, but Tony is the swing vote at both votes. He's not even targeted. His name is barely mentioned, and it's never mentioned in a realistic way. Were you getting flashbacks, or is that just me and large portions of the internet?
I was getting many a flashback. I don't know how to talk about it, to be honest, because I don't necessarily feel the need or want to sort of critique other players' games, yet here I am on a podcast.
Yeah, it's kind of what we do.
It's kind of what we do, right? I probably do want to start by saying, like, credit to all the returning winners for actually showing up and putting their reputation on the line. Like, that takes bigger balls than anything. But yeah, to watch this sort of big, huge game player slipped through, and his name hasn't come out once, right?
He's the only player who's received 0 votes to this point.
It's mind-blowing, and I think this falls into the realm of everyone sort of thinking that all these moves are theirs, or, you know, their game's been so big that they can't stop and actually step back and realize that, holy smoke, this guy's been running rings around us for how many days now? And the fact that he hasn't even received a vote sort of screams at the delusional mindset of some of these winners.
Yeah, I mean, at least for you guys, like, obviously Vakuma were coming against David. Michelle here is the one who's saying Tony's name. But even who she's working with, Nick isn't coming against Tony. You know, Denise, who's one of the other hyenas, has talked about not having him in the final 3, but she still seems to be working him with him, maybe to a final 4 where there's fire. So I don't get it. You know, for him to be able to come out of this episode with not having to flush his idol with so much power, I honestly think the only thing that could take him down now is the Edge of Extinction, you know, returner coming in with, like, all this dream information to be like, are you guys crazy and all of that, and you know, an advantage and all that stuff and momentum. Like, yes, that could help. But in terms of, like, where the game sits right now, like, he's in an almost perfect position.
Yeah, I would like to think if he gets to the end, he's winning. It's honestly mind-blowing. I don't understand how you could let a player like that just slip through to a stage in the game where you're essentially trapped. Like, a player like Tony's always going to find himself an idol or an advantage somehow. If he jags out a challenge win or finds his way to a fire making, like, you're almost guaranteeing him a seat at that finale. And it's scary. It's scary to think people could just let that slide after experiencing the game at least once before, and then all these players winning it. Like, I've seen it happen twice this year now. So
yeah,
it's frustrating from a player that from a from a person that targeted Dave since the probably second vote after merge and couldn't get anyone rallying behind it, I kind of feel for Michelle.
Yeah, and I think that it shows how well Tony has done up till now, because I feel like getting the votes on Kim last week seems essential. It all kind of fell apart when Kim left. You know, these other players who've been working with Kim, potentially to take out Tony before he won immunity last week, Denise, Nick, Michelle, were all against each other by this episode. So he kind of turned the hyenas against each other, which was cool. So he's put himself in such a great spot. I think for someone like a Sarah, maybe a Ben, there's that lack of clarity around Final Tribal Council. We've spoken about Sarah. Ben keeps talking about having shields, which does not kind of correlate with where he should be in the game. Michelle is onto it. Denise maybe is a little trapped, has some plans she can't carry out. But Nick is one I'm very interested in, and I felt like a really central storyline to these 2 hours were Nick and his failing position in the episode. Obviously, you know, he lost the numbers last week. He goes with the majority because he didn't feel he had, you know, the numbers to vote out Jeremy and stick with Kim, where he would have been in a really solid four against the Tony contingent. Now he's here at kind of the bottom of this majority, and he has all the power in the first vote. They give him the power. They put him on the majority of the split vote. All he has to do is vote for Ben instead of Jeremy, and he doesn't do it. This, to me, is like the central decision of the episode. What did you think about this decision?
Well, I kind of felt how Michelle spoke to him afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
It was it was frustration. It was like, where to now? Thanks a lot. You've just sort of like derailed us. And I don't know. I'm not sure what the thought process was behind doing that. It's I can't give you, honestly, I can't give you logical answers to these decisions. And that's what's frustrating. It's just the whole frustration about my season of Survivor and this season's. Like, do I want to watch the Nicks and the Bens of the world and the Michelles get to the end? If you told me at the start of the season, I would say no. Watching the program, do I still want them to get to the end instead of Tony's? No. But as a logical, rational player, is it frustrating watching these players let Tony get to the end? Yes. Like, yeah. I want to see them take Kim out. I want to see them take out these players. But I think what's happened, and this has been, I don't know if it's been underreported, because I haven't, sorry, listened to your podcast, but I love that Tony has fed to Ben that he is one of the big players. He's one of the lions, and that the hyenas are going to attack him. That's just feeding to Ben's ego. And now Ben sort of bought into that of, I need to keep these lions around.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, that is true. And that's definitely been a running theme. As I said, he's talking about shields, and like Ben should be thinking about where Nick was thinking last episode. And he said, you know, there's only so many people I can beat. And he was thinking, you know, in that direction, even though he didn't really take action on that in parts of this episode to kind of go with a better plan for him. At least he was like clear about where he sat in the game. Ben hasn't been right in where he's thinking, man, maybe I've been blaming Ben more. And maybe I should have been giving more credit to Tony, who brought Ben in as, you know, a big threat at the merge. And we were all like, does Ben fit into that group? And you're right, probably feeding into that. And there's been a lot of incepting of Ben that's been kind of like a running theme lately.
Yeah, totally. And you feel like the penny sort of dropped for Ben when he got that disadvantage, and he sort of said to Jeff that, you know, it doesn't seem I'm making any friends out here this season. And you can see from the jury's reaction, like them laughing when he's like a few episodes ago. And I just think to myself, okay, that's the point in time in your game where you've got to go, do you know what? This road, this path that I'm taking clearly isn't being respected because they don't see me as the driver. I need to change course. I need to flip this script, and I need to vote out one of the power players and go, you know what? That move was mine. You might not have appreciated how I've played the game up to now, but I took out one of the biggest players this game was about to see.
Yeah, because if you look at it, it's like super objectively, walking into this, you know, final seven episode, there were four hyenas, Ben, Nick, Michelle, and Denise, who it's all in their best interest to go to the final four together, take out Jeremy, Sarah, and Tony. You know, these were chess pieces. That's probably what those four players would do. But then it comes down to the fact that, like, you know, Denise doesn't want to work with Nick and Michelle, it seems, and Ben thinks that he's fine and can go to the end with these more lines and that he's a lion. So it's that lack of clarity that means that they aren't, like, we can see where they sit. And we're saying, you four go together and you, you know, you leave that three out and everything like that. But unfortunately, they can't see that. And that might be, again, a positive play by the lions to do that. And that's why it doesn't work. And as viewers, we can see it so clearly that it's frustrating.
Yeah. And I don't even feel like it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's just the edit that's showing it. It's literally, it's TV. It's Tony. He did this in Kageyan. Like, how can you not understand that perception is everything? And he has the perception of, if Tony gets to the end, Tony's there because Tony got himself there. Nobody else took Tony there. Like, straight away, you got to cut that.
Yeah, I actually love that from Sarah, because it was a very Shan comment when she said to Michelle, like, Michelle was saying that Tony would win at the end, and Sarah says, how do you know who's running the show? And so, Michelle says, perception is everything, and that's the kind of thing that I spoke about with Shan in the deep dive, and that she spoke about with Brooke on your season, where it was like, well, we haven't made our pitch yet, and Brooke was like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is what I as a juror feel, and I have the power, and the jury have the power, and perception is really all that matters.
And I honestly screamed it at every single tribal council that if David gets to the end, David is winning, and no one wanted to listen because they all believed that the moves they were pulling were their own moves and it wasn't David. And so if that was true or not, I don't care. Mm-hmm. The perception is David's running the show, and that's exactly what's happened with Tony.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's true for Sarah and Ben. In terms of someone like Nick, like, I think he's even said that Tony would beat him, Sarah would beat him, and Jeremy would beat him. You know, Tony and Sarah talk about how Nick doesn't want to go to the end with them. And I actually think that this was now, like, almost blinding. Like, as much as we have said, like, don't take people further that you can't beat in the end, I think when it came down to Ben versus Jeremy, when he's able to decide the vote on the split, he says to Michelle, like, I can't beat Jeremy. And to me, I think he actually made the wrong decision by, yes, okay, fine. So he's kept a goat in the game that maybe he could beat at the end, although he does end up going for Ben in the next episode, which is a little baffling. But, and he's taken out Jeremy, he definitely can't beat Jeremy, but he's also empowered Sarah and Tony especially, who would
exactly
beat him. So didn't see the forest for the trees in that, even if, like, he was thinking correctly, which was, like, better my jury chances. But now you're not in a position in the game where you could get to the jury. You've empowered two people who would beat you there. So I think this was a miss.
I completely agree. It's like, you gotta take a shot at someone from that alliance, whether they're a person you think you can beat at the end or not. If no one wanted to go after Tony and it was only Ben, you just need to make that decision, get rid of Ben. That weakens Tony, and you know that you can get the numbers to rally around and get him, and then everyone's going to mutually agree on Jeremy. So I think it was a missed opportunity by Nick.
Yeah, and I think that as well. So Michelle and Jeremy think that they're in a four with Nick and Tony. They don't know that Tony's not in it. They don't know that the split vote is coming. So Nick is the one with all the information. So if Nick were to go to them and give them the information and take that initiative, then he could say, look, I don't want to take out Ben, even though, again, he does end up wanting to take out Ben the next time after voting out Jeremy, because Jeremy's a bigger jury threat. But at that time, he doesn't want to take out Ben. Surely he could go to Michelle and to Jeremy and say, you know, I will vote with you and I do have the power to do this, but I'd rather take out someone who is, like, you know, a bigger threat to me. Let's take out Tony, or let's blindside Tony. I mean, imagine what a huge move that would then elevate his jury perception as well, which would be a, you know, two birds in the spy shack with one stone. Or let's take out Sarah or something. Like, if he didn't want it to be Ben from a jury perspective, he could still have targeted, surely, one of the people he sees as definitely above him in jury potential, and made a huge move to raise his own profile, and had all the control to do it, and had a great winning path. And he could have had the power to do that, but he doesn't go back to Michelle and Jeremy with that information and make that move happen.
That way of saying.
That's true, but they seem no, to think that Tony, like, they seem, Jeremy seemed shocked that Tony had turned on him. Like, he said, yeah, bad move. So I don't think he knew that split vote was happening. I think he thought that they were a four.
Yeah, I personally think the move there for Nick is to take out Sarah. If he can recognize that Jeremy wants to keep Tony in the game for his own personal gain, then the move there is to hit up Michelle, to hit up Jeremy, knowing where Tony has split the votes, and get Sarah out of the game. I think that's the best move, because it keeps Ben in the game. He would definitely not partner up with Jeremy. He knows he can potentially beat Ben at the end, and then he's got Tony's left-hand girl out.
then you can make something happen against Jeremy and Tony, who are the biggest jury threats at that point, and kind of bring all the hyenas together. Then it would have made more sense for us just like looking back. Then he could have brought in Denise, then he could have brought in Ben by kind of breaking up the three that was Sarah, Tony, and Ben, and taking out someone he thinks could beat him at the end. Like, it would have been a really perfect opportunity. And how good would that have looked? Like, he would have been the one making the move. It wouldn't have just been a flip between two groups. It would have been like making a new group, making a new dynamic, but he can take all the credit for it. There would have been so much win potential to taking the initiative to make it happen.
Yep.
And I also think, like, Tony would have done this. Like, if Tony's in that exact position, that's what Tony does. Great. Because he actually did it two weeks ago.
He did it. Yeah, he did it 2 weeks ago. Exactly. So it's, I don't know. I just feel like we're just watching, I guess, passive playing, and you just hope it would be a bit more ramped up. And yeah. And it's still exciting to watch, though. It's a really confusing situation. Really confusing season.
It's a great cast. Like, they can make anything work. But I think all the players should be thinking, what would Tony do? As someone who's played, you know, such an incredible game, I think his first time out and this time, like, you make that move. You know, you take the initiative to do that. By Tony doing that 2 weeks ago, he got himself into a great position. You know, if he hadn't taken out Sophie, he might be on the bottom of an alliance right now, run by Sarah and Sophie. Like, he's always taken the initiative. Then he comes back and he has to, you know, do some damage control of it, but he takes the initiative to, he never lets the game come to him. You know, like, by Nick just going along with the plan and just going along with the split vote when he's not in a great position anyway, he's letting the game come to him. Tony goes to the game. Like, Tony takes the shot 5 steps ahead and then does the damage control, and that's why he's always actively ahead of the game.
And that's exactly why I said that you cannot take Tony to the end thinking that you've played a bigger game or a better game or made the decisions over him, because no one's going to believe that Tony Varchos has just stood aside and let the game float by. Like, everyone knows he takes it by the horns. So that perception alone is enough to not want to sit next to him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can see there was a secret scene about like how hard Tony works, which I did watch. I don't want people to think that I'm just like not consuming Survivor content. I'm so insecure about this Edge of Extinction jury stuff.
She didn't watch it. I told Shannon about Tony against the tree in the secret scene before we podcast today. Yeah. So she's lying about that one.
People. There's no amount of internet content of Tony that I won't, you know, that I won't definitely watch. But that secret scene just showed, like, the perception of Tony is that he is that player, like that player who's just going to win, that player who is working while everyone else is asleep. Like, it's the kind of person that you can see it. They're talking about it from the jury bench. And, you know, it's just obvious. And if it's not obvious, then someone's coming back from the jury from Edge of Extinction next week to probably tell everyone about it. But I even wonder, like, I feel like if you had come back from the jury on Edge of Extinction, for example, and said this to Sean, she still would have been like, you don't know. No. So I wonder if that will even help.
Yeah, you're right. If I had done that, the people I played with are so stuck in their own heads of their own game that their own delivery at Final Tribal Council would somehow miraculously shock us all and make us want to write their names down. So, it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens with the returning player.
Yeah, I mean, for Nick, you know, just to go on to a second part of the episode where he gets voted out, he comes back from a tribal council where he is the one who's made the vote happen. He was the crucial vote to immediately, we see Ben and Tony talking about how it's Michelle and then Nick. And it's like, this is the problem. Like, I feel like he has such a wrong read in the dynamics. So he's made the wrong decision. And he doesn't know where he's at. He had that, like, killer confessional where he's like, this is my best spot in the game. And you were like, oh, buddy, you were going to the end. And then he's given this advantage as well. So, again, another packed episode for Nick. And I feel like it was just, like, every step was, like, a downward turn.
Yeah. And then taking the sort of blowing his own trumpet of he was the reason that Michelle won because, you know, he gave the disadvantage to Ben and, it's, you know, I feel like Nick's edit the entire season has been a bit of a dodo edit, you know, the whole like, oh, you can't have a conversation without Nick creeping up on us. And, like, how many times would that happen a day of other people just walking in on conversations? But yeah, he definitely got stitched up, but it wasn't his greatest read last night, that's for sure.
Well, we've had no sense of Nick, I feel, in the edit, like, especially since the merge. At the very beginning of the game, even, like, it was always, like, he was, like, the presumptive decoy boot. And then we had, you know, he was in power when he swapped, but then also I didn't love how that went for him when they voted out Yule, and then he wasn't in control at the merge boot, and then I feel like he's been floundering since. Like, even if he's been in the majority like he was at the Tyson boot, or he did with when Tony kind of brought that minority together, we've never known why. Like, we've never seen how that happened. In fact, I don't think he got confessionals in either of those episodes where he was in the majority. So we as viewers have been very disconnected from Nick's game and probably the better parts of his game, and all we've seen has kind of been the mistakes, which is unfortunate for him.
Yeah, and it's also the reason that I said, like, full credit to the people, the winners, for actually saying yes again. Because if Nick doesn't play again, he's got this unblemished record where he played once, won once, was seen like as a real strategic threat in his season, and now he's sort of, you know, getting the JT treatment of, you know, he's played again and got worse. But I guess that just comes with it, doesn't it? You take the risk for $2 million.
Yeah, I mean, no winner has lost their legacy for me. I'm someone who still thinks JT is a good winner. Like, I give that credit when it's been earned, and I don't, like, take away from it due to future play. That's just, like, a me thing.
Oh, massively, me too. I going into, like, Heroes Villains, I don't think he hands over that note to Russell and plays that baller play unless, like, without the security of $1 million in his, mm-hmm. you know, back pocket, and the fact that he was willing to take that risk and play that high stakes sort of poker, then I love it. People call it a dumb move. I absolutely loved it. So yeah, I agree. No winner loses their props for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Nick always has wanted to be compared to JT. He said he was most like JT in his bio, and I feel like being compared in this way of like losing legacy is probably not what he was trying to get out of that. But yeah, for me, I don't lose a legacy that hard because I think that they've all gotten here for a reason. People have gained in the season for me. I definitely think more highly of players like Michelle, for example, but no one has lost anything. But for Nick, right, when he gets that advantage, how do you think he should have played that?
I'm not even a fan of the advantage in itself.
It's pretty minor.
It's so minor, and it's so, I just hate it. I just hate the fact that the edge is having a say in the game. And I'm not a big fan overall of advantages or disadvantages in challenges. Like, I like to see people sort of like duke it out for what they are. But the way he played it, you know, I personally would have given it to either Ben or Tony, just because I feel like that'd be the people that would be the most paranoid about it. And, you know, I would have probably tried to frame someone else that, you know, they had given it, just right, to create even more paranoia. But yeah, who knows how to play that? It's honestly such a minute thing.
Well, I think that, like, I think he was trying to get Ben to explode. He calls him like an emotional player by totally using this disadvantage on him. I think where he wasn't helped out was that I think everyone would have just assumed it came directly from the edge, right? Like, Tony, like, Ben mm-hmm. knows that Tony's been extorted directly from the edge. We know we get most things from the edge. This is done completely differently to how Tony was extorted, because obviously it's been sold to someone as an advantage, which is what Tony originally thought he got with that. Like, maybe Ben just thought, like, it comes from the edge. And I think that would have really decreased what would have otherwise been extreme paranoia.
Totally.
Another way the edge is won the game.
Agreed.
but I also think with Nick, like, he's in such a bad spot at the point where he's gotten the advantage because he hasn't taken the initiative to make that move that it's just so hard for him to use it well. Like, I love the approach to spend your tokens because they're all about to expire. We're going to talk about the fire token economy. But, like, I like that. I like taking, like, everything that's given to you to try and, like, benefit yourself. I just feel like, for him, the most beneficial thing from where I'm sitting is probably just, you know, use it on Michelle so that she definitely loses so you can make it one more round. But again, that would take A, knowing your dynamics in the game and where you sit, which he definitely did not, and B, not being in the position where just getting one more round is your best case scenario and assuring that for yourself, which is only because he's in that bad position. It's like I used to talk to my brother, like, well, what should Sean and Mo do here, where, like, you know, they're at the final five and four with Brooke and David, like, that's a hard spot. And he's like, they shouldn't be in the spot to begin with. Like, it's an impossible thing to to kind of work out what they should do, because it's like what they should have done was like 2-3 rounds ago. And I think that's true for Nick. Like, the main mistake came in that first episode, and then whatever, definitely he built on that because his read of where he was wrong, but it could only like minimally decrease his chances from an already bad spot that he'd made by not making that move.
Yeah. As I said, yeah, I think you nailed it perfectly, but what really could have been done with that disadvantage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it's a small, and that was the payoff to the fire token. That was the last one we got.
Yes, exactly. I feel like they're just like clutching at straws of like, what's another thing we can do with these returning contestants that we need to keep involved in the episode somehow?
Yeah. Well, what did you think of fire tokens more broadly? Now that we've seen the end of fire tokens, they have expired. People have bought their rice, which was the ultimate payoff to this whole season-long thing. How do you feel like this all ended up?
Yeah, look, I actually don't mind it. What I don't like is the people on the edge having like a serious say into what happens in the game. I'm not a fan of that at all. I have no issue with them getting fire tokens to give themselves advantages. I'm not a fan of, you know, every single way to get fire tokens on the edge being some like mass endurance challenge or whatnot, even though I'm a massive Natalie fan. Yeah, I don't mind it. I really don't. I feel like they could have done it a bit better, and they could have done it in a way that didn't affect the people in the game so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said multiple times that the way that fire tokens connect to the edge has been everything I dislike about it. The way that they work in the game, I think, has shown enormous potential, but needs to be largely reworked to me. Like, now that I've seen how it ended up without any payoff, where like the last thing is this like terrible advantage, like I think that it came to a cool conclusion on the edge, and so much focus was on the edge, like, okay, Natalie has grinded so hard that she's got, you know, 14 tokens, she's like so super rich. That to me was like a sensible conclusion to that story of fire tokens, but I also don't like the fire tokens and edge. In terms of the game, like, what? So Denise is buying rice and everyone is having fire tokens that people were destroying their game over, and they've just expired, and there's nothing that's happened with them. Like, that was such a letdown.
Exactly. And even like, oh, Natalie, you're voted out first, so we're going to give you the most chance of getting fire tokens and the biggest advantage to get yourself back in the game. It's just, I wonder if you're voted out with the tokens, if you could keep them.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, and that's what people have said is so unfair. Like, if you look at how, like, Jeremy has no tokens, Nick has no tokens, Kim has no tokens, Natalie has 14, and she couldn't have rubbed it in more that she was like, it's not that I was just the fastest at this advantage, it's also that I've been here so long that I knew exactly where to go. And we're like, okay, Natalie, we get it. We're already irritated by this concept.
I know, but it's like, what, her 2 days more than Amber or whoever was second boot, sorry.
It's not just like, a length thing. Like, she definitely has been the best, but, like, it helped.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I don't believe for a second that, like, you know, she would know that island any more than Boston Rob knows that island. But
Boston Rob's still suffering from that elbow injury, so, yeah. You know, he couldn't have got there.
That is the reason he gave up on his cardio. but, no, it's... I'm just not a fan of it. I don't know if that's just me being burnt from people returning into the game that have been voted out before.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mind the concept of like an edge that everyone knows about that brings in a player pre-merge. And, mm-hmm. you know, it might be your way to win your back into the merge game. I have no problems with that. I do have an issue where it gets so, so deep into the game.
Yeah, I think that there's something about post-merge edge that's uniquely problematic. I mean, pre-merge as well, but, like, the fact that the post-mergers come in and, like, they'll never play with each other again. Like I've said, at least in the pre-merge, you know, Devons and Chris are on edge of extinction together. They will play in the game again. So you'll still have to be somewhat cagey to the point where one person's come back. You're literally on the island with people you'll never play with again. You know, it's a reason that Natalie can give an idol to Tyson, and Tyson can say, this is the most generous thing anyone's done in the game for me. It's like, well, you're not in the game and you'll never be in the game together where an idol could burn Natalie.
They won't burn each other. But hang on that, this is what I'm confused about. If Natalie can get two idols and she comes back, if she wins her way back into the game, she'll win her way back in at six.
She can only come in with one idol.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So now these ridiculous rules on edge and stuff have ridiculous rules on top of them, because you can gain advantages, but not too many advantages.
Yeah. And there was another thing that it was so minor, but just annoyed me so much, was that, so they're allowed to keep their idols, Boston, Rob, and Natalie, that they bought, even though that should be a risk. Like, you buy it, you lose a challenge, it's gone. But no, they lost the challenge, they can still keep it. If you get voted out with an idol, that can't come to the edge. But this loss, this failure, gets rewarded with that. And the new idols are double the cost. So the one she buys for Tyson, for example, is 6 tokens. So everyone who succeeded in making the merge, and, you know, obviously that's a success in the game, you want to survive as long as you can, everyone who succeeded in that missed the discount that Rob and Natalie are still benefiting from. So that's a fire token problem, where, like, they could not deal with the inflation. There was, like, no measured objectivity to where the money was going. Like, it was 1, 1, 1, now whatever you want to charge. Like, there was no reasonable inflation. And also the fact that, like, that just makes no sense. Like, that's just random. That's just saying, hey, Jeff, should they be allowed to keep their idols? Yeah, okay. Like, where is the logic and the basis behind that game decision?
There isn't.
No one thought about this.
I don't know your feelings towards Australian Survivor All-Stars and the timing of tribe swaps and the placement of idols and the Pandora's box and then the... But has that grinded your gears more than the fire tokens, or what's the worst?
Well, for me, Edge of Extinction is the worst twist of any of the franchises, because I don't see how they could have made it more broken. Like, everything that they add to it makes it more broken. The fact that I do think Natalie, to me, should almost definitely be coming back next week. I don't think it's a coincidence that we're getting first and third boots back. I think I've always said it rewards failure. The fire tokens add to that. And there's just so many things. Like, Nick even said in a great secret scene, which I did watch, he was like, actually coming here for a night, if I get back in, could really help me, because I get to hang out with the jury for a night. Like, I could actually have a chance if I get back, and I'll be the underdog, and I'll be, like, their one-day avatar. So,
hey, I'm sorry, I'm not bashing on Nick, but has he just come to this realization, or did he not watch someone return from the edge and win an entire season?
Well, I think it's like people have said, and I think I've said, you know, there's some strategy to just getting voted out and going to the edge, because like, I think Natalie or whoever, or Tyson, whoever comes back, has a great shot to win. Maybe a better shot than they would have had they stayed in the game. So there's strategy to that. I just think people are too scared to pull the trigger on getting voted out. Like, it would be very, very ballsy. So I think that Nick would realize that. But he's not going to get himself voted out. But once he's been voted out, he's like, hey, there's a lot of benefit to this. Like, this has definitely got a lot of great stuff for me.
Do you think that if the edge returns, that we...
It's not going to return. We made sure of that. So,
will we ever continue? Can we ever get a player that goes out there and goes, I'm going to get myself voted out first, and I'm going to make every single person that comes to the edge feel so comfortable and loved and like they're my best friend, that when I return to the game, they have no option but to vote for me at the end?
I don't see why not. I mean, we've seen Ozzy vote himself out to come back from redemption. I think there's actual merit to this. I think the merit is, like, be an early boot, especially if it's paired with fire tokens. Gain your fire tokens. Buy your stuff on the discount that expires, and you still get to keep it even if you lose the challenge. You lose the challenge, by the way. You don't want to come back at the merge. That would make sense.
No.
Then win the last challenge. Come into the game with an idol, with so much love on the jury, not having screwed anyone over, not having... This is something I was talking about with my husband, Peter, today, was, like, it's not just that you don't screw over the jury, which is something we've talked about at length, but it's also, like, all these people that are, like, disappointed in Ben's game, for example. If Ben were to pull a Chris Underwood and have the most amazing finale, it still wouldn't be enough, because he has not played super well in the eyes of the jury. Like, it's too late for him. So just to even give yourself the opportunity to stay in the game to unimpress the jury is now, like, a negative. If you're on the edge of extinction, there's no way to, you know, negatively affect your game perception, because you're not playing the game. Then if you come back, you've started, like, basically from go, and you can impress the jury. So there's no, like, negative points, which I also think is really interesting. So there's a lot of really bad reasons to be in the game, and not a lot of good reasons to stay, other than just, like, if you don't make it back, you then just are first boot. So high risk, high reward.
I agree. And if I was in a season like that, I would take the flint with me every single time to tribal council and make sure that I could practice fire making every single day at the edge, so that when I returned, I knew that all I need to do is get through one or two votes, and I'm guaranteed to make myself go to fire.
Yeah, and that's another thing is, like, Ben here is being targeted in some way or being raised as a threat because he's a fire maker. On the edge, you can sit in front of the whole tribe, make fire every day in practice, and that can never come back to bite you, especially after the merge.
Ever.
Again, you'll never play with these people. So I had a tweet about this where I know I've spoken a lot about the edge, but it's interesting to see how it kind of comes out now that it's over for the season. And I feel like the value of the edge is it's a race, you know, like it's a race in find the most things, be the fastest, win the challenge, make the most friends. Like, you have to work hard. In Survivor, it's a complex game. You have to work smart, you know? Like, you can't just win all the challenges, then you're a threat, you know? You can't just have these really pure, honest, genuine friendships. You might get burnt. Like, there's a calculated risk to every action that you take, and just pushing the hardest isn't necessarily a win, because pushing the hardest can tip you over the edge, you get voted out, or you're too much of a threat. There's pros and cons to everything. Whereas in The Edge, yes, Natalie did very well in pushing the hardest, doing the best at things, but there was no drawback to that. And it's just a much more simple game. So I'm really, really, really hoping that next week the game I love is validated in its complexity and its beauty, rather than it just being like, hey, the person who worked the hardest and pushed the hardest, which has value, but not the value I'm looking for, I don't want that to be the thing that wins the season.
Again, yes.
I have a lot of thoughts on the edge.
You couldn't have said it better. I feel like I feel like we should turn this podcast around.
Yeah, because it's too negative. Yeah, people.
No. I feel like you just text me quickly the list of questions and stuff, because like your takes are just 100. Like, they're just on point. So I can just ask you, and then you can just give your take. It's
I give a lot of my takes anyway.
It's the perfect format. Let's do that.
No. I want your insights. I want to talk about.
No, who cares? This is brilliant. You're saying everything I feel. This is very reminiscent of like the way you watched my All Star season, and you would explain my game to me better than I would explain it myself. It's like, yes, Shannon, yes.
I'm really happy to hear that. This is why we both have PTSD, because I kind of feel like I played, but in a way that I didn't have to actually go outside at all, which was, that's my jam.
All I want to add to that is that I'm taking, like, all the people on the edge can do is do what they can do. This isn't taking away from anything that they're doing personally. These jabs are at the game. This is at the format. This is at the structure of what this edge is, and it's so frustrating. I would have rather have to see them have a bit of paranoia or team up or make alliances on the edge by when they find these advantages, it means that they have to use other people's tokens to, you know, disadvantage them in the upcoming challenge, or, you know, they can feed three people and they have to pick and it has to be in front of everyone. Like, just so it's a game within a game there, rather than you can just camp for 33 days. Yeah, it's tough and taxing and you're hungry, but it doesn't come with the draining headspace that the game confronts you with. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, definitely, like, and when we get to the chilly points, you'll see, but Natalie has played phenomenally. I think that she has pushed the hardest. I think that her move to get jury votes with Tyson in a way that doesn't negatively impact her at all with the idol is brilliant. You know, I think that he's saying she's so generous when it's like, well, she didn't give him an advantage in the challenge, which would actually hurt her in that he would then be competing against her. She gave him something that he sees as so generous, but it's for her. It's you know, like, there's no pure good deed, because she's the one who benefits from it in so many ways by having that perception of her at no loss to herself. That's a great play. Like, all the props to that. There's nothing wrong with any of these players who feel that way, you know, who make use of Edge of Extinction. It's just, for me, the format, which I've now spoken about to death. I'm going to get your insights on Ben in this episode.
I just love that you just quoted Joey Tribbiani in that.
Oh, I'm doing a Friends rewatch. I'm so glad you picked up on that. I just watched that episode.
Yeah, I love that.
Exactly. That's such a very wise thing from Joey, don't you think?
Right? It just goes against everything his character is.
When I watch TV a lot, it like seeps into my daily life. That's why this Friends thing came into my analysis of the episode.
Love it.
Season 5 has been a time. Anyway, so Ben in this episode. Firstly, last week, I know you haven't been listening to the podcast. It's totally fine. But last week I had a whole thing about the fear of the coin and how I feel that could have impact, how I feel that did have impact. Michelle on Twitter validated the take, which to me was you know, the highlight of my day. But I was excited to see the power of the coin in this episode. I feel like Ben spoke often about how he didn't want the fate to come down to the coin. He was fearful of the coin. He literally said, we don't want the coin to F us. And I think that we saw him going after Nick, which was the third option that I spoke about last week, instead of the two people who could be decided by the coin, Jeremy and possibly Ben. And then we saw him, you know, when that didn't work, when Nick won immunity, we saw him, you know, obviously the third option became Denise. He wasn't into that. He tried to manipulate the position so that the coin couldn't decide it, because they could vote for either Jeremy or Michelle if he could break them apart. And then they just did Mather's risky vote split. I credit all of that to the coin, so I'm very in on this theory right now. One thing I thought was really interesting was Ben and Denise came somewhat out of nowhere. They were very close at the beginning of the game when he was teaching her to find idols, and she did. And I'd almost forgotten about that because it was so long ago, and now they're so close again.
It was foreshadowing.
Yeah, well, it was accurately like their relationship. Obviously, they've had that bond since the beginning. We've just seen nothing of it since, like...
I'll teach you to find idols on day 7, and on day 35, you can give me an arm massage.
Yeah, well, on day 35, she becomes part of his majority for the first time since LA. Like, what was this relationship?
I personally just think it's like a relationship of convenience now, that they both probably see their end game involving each other, and that can bring people together. Not that I've been near that end game, but...
You came further than this episode.
I imagine that it could bring people together.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think he genuinely seemed to be protective of Denise. Like, he definitely wants to go for the third option so that the coin doesn't decide the game, which was Nick. When Nick wins immunity, Denise is that third option, and I think the reason that she doesn't go home is because... you know, Ben is protecting her. Like, I think he's actively doing that, and they need his number. So I actually think that he was, I mean, maybe it is out of convenience, but it seems quite strong.
You think Denise goes over Jeremy?
Yeah, I think that the reason that, like, this four want to stick together, right? So they don't want the hyenas to come for them. So Ben, who thinks he's a lion, with Sarah and Tony and Jeremy, that's the reason that four want to stick together. They want to take out Nick, he wins immunity. They want to take out Michelle, concerns about the coin. Denise is the only third option. I think the reason that they don't just go for that option and actually take out one of the four they've been concerned about is Ben doesn't want to give up that number.
I'll pay it.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I get. I agree. I do like the thought of the coin coming into play and causing a bit of paranoia about it. Would have it been cool if people didn't know about it, if Jeremy wasn't in a position where Michelle had to give it to him? And why did we ever see last episode that everyone knew that Michelle gave it to Jeremy?
Yeah, I don't know how they... Well, I mean, there was a lot of information about the coin. We didn't know what was told when. Jeremy told Tony Michelle gave him the coin. By this episode, everyone knows Michelle gave Jeremy a coin and exactly what it does. So at this point, it's open information. And I think that level of transparency and fear was controlling so much of the action, to the point where they split the vote. I didn't think they'd be splitting the vote again after what happened with Sophie. I thought that would be so risky. I mean, they're splitting the vote with Denise, who technically wasn't in this majority, Tony and Nick, who've already split up a split vote, and they take the leap on that, and I think that the impetus to do that risky move is the fear of the coin. So that the coin is it's a powerful little thing.
Okay, I like it. The coin flip itself...
Yes.
Like, why did they not flip it into the fire? Like,
how would you see what it was?
Oh, it's only, like, it's make-believe flames. Like, it's a controlled fire. You could have it flip. It would land on these controlled flames. You'd have a camera over it. It would say exactly what it is. You could say it into Jeff's ear. And, like, then it burns as tribal council as he reads the votes. Like... stuff this little table thing, but Michelle saved that with her cute dance, and unfortunately it was just did it matter? It didn't matter if she got
safe
or not. It didn't matter.
Jeremy had both votes. Like, it would have mattered had she given it to Jeremy.
To Jeremy, correct. And then she would have been on that list of dumbest moves
of
all time.
No, imagine if she gave it to Jeremy, but then it landed on unsafe and that saved her. That would have been entertaining.
Correct. But it was a bit of a nothing, wasn't it?
Okay, counter offer. They throw it into the fire. It's like a magic coin. If it falls onto like safe, nothing happens. And if it falls onto not safe, like there's like a fire explosion or something like that. They could do something with the special effects. I think that's what we're looking for.
Yes.
Because that's also good. People thought that she didn't properly flip it. This is what Rob was saying, that Jeff should have flipped it because, you know, how do you know? And people thought it was like a very suspect flip that she just didn't flip round and around.
If she took advantage of that, then so be it. I did notice it only like turned itself like two or three times. But hey, if she practiced that, then kudos to her. Like she's ahead of the game.
Yeah, this is something that would happen in The Genius, which is a great Korean game show. I don't know if you've watched, but you definitely should. Where like they definitely would have like they'd have a coin, but there would be a trick to the coin, and you'd have to secretly work it out without knowing that there was a trick. I don't think that's Survivor, based on the different way that The Genius made an economy and Survivor made an economy. It's a very different show, but there would be something there. This was just like, how much can you get away with flipping the coin in a way that is successful for you?
Is there any way she could have like weighted down one side by, mm-hmm. I don't know, painting it?
Yeah, there's some sort of engineering thing where she could have increased her odds.
Yes.
Even though it was a completely irrelevant flip. Anyway,
does that win favor for her with the jury that she, and this is in quotation marks, played it successfully?
For me, I
feel like it looks better on her, I hate this word, resume. I feel like it looks better on her resume, the fact that she flipped it to immune herself, than it would have if she had flipped it and didn't.
And that's
so weird, because it doesn't matter either way. It's like, but for some reason it's like, oh, and she flipped the coin correctly.
Yeah, no, I that should not matter. I don't think for Michelle the jury points are coming from her strategic game, or I think that she's done a lot of things great, but she was on the wrong side of both of these votes. She's been on the wrong side a lot. Like, I think she has a chance, social game.
She's getting a bucket load of jury votes. You better believe that. There's a lot of women on that jury who, you know, like Kim, for example, gave all three of her tokens to the three remaining females in the game. I believe so. Maybe not Sarah.
Yeah, she did.
And you better believe that, you know, the male contestant is so celebrated and, we're given such great edits because we're men, that these women know what it's like to have to be in the shadows of the Boston Robs and the Tonys and whatnot, even though the Parvati's and Sandra's and Kim's and Denise's and Natalie's are like some of the best players we've ever had. You better believe that if Michelle's at the end there, that it's going to be a very strong case for her getting these votes, because they know how hard it is to compete against these people.
I think Tony would beat anyone by a landslide, but I think Michelle.
I don't at all.
You don't? Who do you think would beat Tony? Or maybe just Michelle or anyone else?
I would like to think no one beats Tony, but I do think that it's not going to be a landslide. I do truly believe that Michelle would get at least four or five votes.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think for Michelle, for me, what I see is like when she's describing the fire tokens as social objects and how much they mean to her, I was like, hey, this is the Michelle game. It's not about like the numbers and the zeros and the ones. Like, it's very much like, you know, it meant a lot to me. And I think that her social play is so much more evident to me than it was in Koh Rong. I think they just maybe are showing it better, or maybe I was blind to it. I'm going to rewatch Koh Rong and find out the answer to that. But I think that we see so much of that great social play. I think she did a lot great in this episode. You know, she's got extreme clarity. As we said, she's the one telling Nick what's up, and she's completely right. She's saying, you know, what's happening right after they've said, Michelle then Nick. And she's like, it's me then you. She's saying to Sarah, you know, Tony's going to win. She's the only one who has clarity on that situation. Everyone else is playing blind. And I think she shows her social game, and she's willing to work with Nick on the fire tokens. Like, that's all great. I do think, you know, she obviously was on the wrong side of both votes. So I think that in terms of like flipping the coin or whatever, like if you're going to vote for Michelle, you're not being like, well, it's because she like controlled the game. You're being like, well, she made some stuff happen and she was some interesting things. And mostly I just really, really like her. And like, that's very valuable.
Totally. And I feel like a lot of the people on the edge are friends with her in real life, or have, you know, seen her out in real life. And
what if Wendell doesn't vote for her? That would be
right. But that's another one. Like Wendell knows her personally. Like, is he going to vote for her and try and shack back up and be a four times millionaire? Like, it's
that's the long game.
That's the long game.
Both for her to win,
and
then
when it pays,
propose.
It pays.
That's what the boss and Rob move. You know, yeah. You're winning then.
No, honestly, like I'm like, okay, to put it into perspective, okay, if Tessa was on, in the final two, in All Stars, and hadn't done a thing all game, and I was on the jury. And she was against somebody that I didn't dislike, and had played a pretty decent game. I'm probably still voting for Tessa because I like Tessa. I hang out with Tessa in real life. She's a friend of mine. And yeah, I respect the game. And yeah, it goes against everything that I say and stand for. But you know what? She's a friend of mine, and I'm going to reward my friend. And I feel like Michelle has that over Tony.
Yeah, I mean, people had a problem when Sean was, did her one vote was from Mo, and I was like, well, they're actual real life friends, like, of course you vote for your real life friend.
When Mo voted for Sean,
yeah
of course she's going to, like, they're best mates in real life before All Stars, of course she's going to. If like Amy from my season had just, like,
I just saw on House Rules,
if she just bogged her way to final two against, like, I don't know, someone I just met on All Stars, of course Amy's getting my vote. Like, she's one of my best friends.
Yeah,
so it plays a part,
and it did play a part, because Michelle won in Crow Wrong against someone we thought had played a more aggressive strategic game, a more comprehensive strategic game.
But they didn't know it. They didn't know the cast before the game started.
What I'm saying is
Michelle would have met and hung out with a lot of these people.
But even beyond that, like, Michelle's game in Kurong shows that the value of the social game. I mean, there was a lot of other stuff at play, and Scott and Jason and everything, but, like, there's a few winners that really do show that, like, often it's just, like, I like you more, and that's a very, very, very valid way to vote.
Yeah, each jury to their own.
Mm, yeah, exactly. And it could, obviously, in an all-star season when they know each other, it's further complicated by those real relationships. But I think Michelle has that. I think she's got a great social game. I think the fact that, and Rob and I spoke about it last week, like, Michelle gets a lot of fire tokens. And Ben spoke this week about how he hasn't received one fire token. Does that speak, you know, the people who are giving fire tokens are the people leaving to go to the jury / the edge. And there might be something there that's like, well, at least they like her. And that's something to hold on to when you go into a final tribal council.
I feel like when you give someone a fire token, you're essentially telling them, I'm penciling your name on that parchment for you to win.
Mm.
Like, that's what it is. Like, in my eyes, it's saying, I want to give you an advantage because I want you to win, and I'm going to pencil your name down.
For me, I thought, like, because they can get back in, I think they'd be looking at it like, I like you, I will work with you if I come back. If you're sitting in the final tribal council, there's a very good chance, but I'm not super threatened by you. Like, I don't think Tony gets a lot of points because people are threatened by him, but I think he'd get a lot of jury votes. So I think that if Michelle isn't there against someone who's just that big a threat, like a Tony, then the coins do point to the fact that she's got a big leg up. You know, she's got that social connection. She's got the fact that people want to at least work with her, and that'll probably lend itself to voting for her. But I don't think it's a necessary voting, you know, vote on the jury just based on, and they're also not threatened by her, and that might be a negative thing.
Yeah, I can see the point there for not giving Tony tokens.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely mostly a good thing to get tokens.
Yeah, I agree.
I just don't think it's like 100% you're getting the jury vote. It's like, but it's mostly a good thing.
But again, like, I would probably give my tokens to the people I liked.
Yeah.
And that I'd want to win. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a good thing. Like, Ben spoke about how he hasn't received a token yet. Then he got this disadvantage, which he definitely thought was coming from the jury and the edge. I think what was interesting for me with Ben was that he was targeted by the minority in both of these episodes, despite the fact that, like, he is not a jury threat, you know, like, and the reason that Jeremy's targeting him is because Jeremy and Ben have had no love lost. And the reason that Nick is targeting him is because he says he's, like, emotional. And I'm like, these are all extremely personal reasons. You know, in terms of, like, the one strategic thing, which was fire, like, if you're Sarah and Tony, I think it'd be good to have Ben there to beat someone else at fire for you, you know, maybe the Edge of Extinction returner. So I don't see any strategic merit to get rid of him, but his name is always there. Like, it's getting to a bit of an Abby Maria place for me, where it's like, this person should be the GOAT. You would definitely take them to the end, but their name is around just because he's having social issues with them. And I think the fire tokens and the lack of fire tokens probably speak to that lack of social game that's happening for Ben.
I would want Ben would be my number one person I'd want to sit next to at the end.
But his name keeps coming up.
Is it that, and it's mind-blowing. Why? And, do you know, the argument to that, I guess, is you don't, I don't know how many people are sitting on the jury, but I'm just going to say 9. I know that's not, I know there's heaps more, but the standard,
It's 16 people, okay.
Like, I've always said you don't need 9 votes to win $500,000. You need 5. So, you know, if.
Well, 9 Tony, now, actually.
Well, yeah.
Now it's 9 of 16.
Like, you're playing cricket, like, you don't get a 6 for it going out of the stadium. You get a 6 for it going over the rope. Mm-hmm. You don't need to hit it further than it needs to go. You don't need to get more than 5 votes. You don't get more money for each vote you get additional on top of the 5th vote. It's, you get the same amount of prize money. So, unless these people are looking at it going, do you know what, for my game, it's better that Ben's out. I can still beat the people left in the game. Yes, they might grab 1 or 2 votes, 3 votes, but I'm still going to get the majority.
Yeah, it's so hard. Like, I was talking with my brother last night and we were like, okay, which votes would Denise versus Michelle get? And it's like, it's impossible to count votes because, so the biggest jury ever was...
Like, who does Danny vote for? Who does Danny respect?
It's so true. I mean, Tony hasn't met many of these people. A few of them haven't met many of these people because they've been on the jury and they just weren't on trials with them. And, like, the biggest jury ever was 9 for a very long time. In the 30s, it got to 10. Then in Edge of Extinction, it got to 13. And now it's at 16. Juries used to be 7 people. Like, it is a whole jury bigger, a 7-person jury bigger than what was the largest jury of all time, like, 5 years ago. Like, it's actually insane. There are 16 people. Only Cassandra quit. It would have been a 17-person jury. It's laughable.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so what, that's hard to predict.
Yeah, you would have needed, so there's going to be 16. Oh, how cool would an 8-8 split be?
Oh, I hope it's close because this is an ongoing joke that I have with my cousin. And the first vote of your first season, the Joan Kent tie, went on for so long because it was, you know, it was 12 people voting and there was a tie. So then they had to re-vote and it was just so, it was just Joan Kent for like minutes. And I think, imagine if it is, say, like, okay, so Tony and Sarah. It would be Tony Sarah for 16 votes. Like, that we don't have time in the finale to do that.
Even if it is a landslide, it'll be, once it gets to like the 6th, 7th vote, you're like, okay, come on, we get it.
Yeah.
Tony, that's 8 votes, Tony. No votes, anyone else.
The most people we've ever seen voting for a winner or in a tribe is 13, and we're about to see, you know, 16 people vote. It's going to be so many votes.
Ridiculous.
I did
go to a tribal council that had, I think, 18 people at.
But you didn't all vote for the same person.
No, we didn't.
Yeah.
Correct.
So you didn't all vote in the same vote.
That was a long ass night, let me tell you that.
Yeah, we're all destined to, it's just actually going to be, and how will they fit all those jury speeches? There's a lot of logistics that I'm confused about what's going to happen next week.
I know, there's going to be a few hurt jurors, they get their question cut, mm-hmm. potentially.
Yeah, we should have done a game on that, like whose question gets cut. I'm taking Danny.
Yep.
I mean, technically any of them could not be jurors because anyone can make it back. And Danny won out 3rd like Chris Underwood, so who knows?
Oh my... Yes. Can we petition that or make that a hashtag?
We don't want Danny to come back and win.
Yes, Danny Underwood. just to make this season like absolute shambles of this is what you get for bringing back the Edge. We've got Danny Underwood.
You know, production would enjoy that and the people who wouldn't enjoy it would be me. So I don't want to screw myself over by making that, putting that out into the universe.
I'd love to see the spin that Jeff puts on Danny, how great it is for the game that Danny can come back and win.
I bet Jeff could do it. If anyone could do that, it's probably Jeff. Okay, well, some of these other players, what about Denise? Denise here, you know, we spoke a bit about the Ben stuff, how well she got back into that majority. She did something interesting where she, you know, she made herself that presumptive boot. We actually got a question about the similarities to Harry doing that when Matt Rogers went home. She put herself out there. Did you see any similarities with that?
No, I didn't, because I don't think for it ever a second she was like really buying it. I think what she was trying to do was, I think she was obviously done with the, you know, the scramble. She was done with the everyone telling everyone what they want to hear and lies and whatnot. I feel like she was just trying to put it on the table that to prevent that from happening from the minority and bring everyone in that, you know, she's very aware that she's that person. The Harry thing's a different story, is that I don't know if you want me to get into it.
No, go for one.
So after John went home that night, Matt got pulled for a night confessional, and I told my alliance that he's going to try and start hell over here. So I actually want one of you to vote, one of Lockie or Brooke to vote for me, because, you know, we've been playing since day one. And if he does play an idol, I'm happy to go home on an idol. But what I was actually doing was I was going to put my one vote on Harry. And then when the votes came out, if Matt did play an idol, I knew my alliance would have my back and vote out Harry. But Harry, for some reason, wanted two votes on him. And we were convinced he had an idol or something like that. So we're like, hell yeah, let's do it. And then he can play high risk of, does he play his idol or not? Turns out he got an advantage. Right. The day after that day. But anyway, no, I don't see the similarities with Denise.
Yeah, I think that for Harry, like, for him, it's a more, like, long-term plan, I guess, to, like, get in with the group. But it is, like, risky that night, because if Matt does have an idol, he will go home. Whereas, like, for Denise, like, she gains from this vote because she's the one who benefits if they blindside Nick and Michelle. Like, if they don't blindside them, they could play something, and then she's going to go home because she's, like, the decoy boot. So she needs to really sell the blindside by doing the right stuff, by putting herself that much forward. They can sell more of a blindside. So actually, she's protecting herself. So it's kind of counterintuitive in that way, but it's less of a long-term thing, I think, and more of just, like, a way to sell this actual move without danger to her, where Harry put himself in danger but had more long-term benefits.
Yeah, and do you know what? I don't even think it gave him any benefit other than the fact that we were like, okay, his head's on the chopping block. Cool, no worries.
Well, he was trying something.
Yeah, and good on him. No, but also with Denise's game, it's so hard because I feel like she's just been a little bit snookered for the majority of the season, where there hasn't been much, like, manoeuvring she's been able to do. And sometimes in the game Survivor, it can just fall like that. You can make your own luck and you can do things, but, you know, the way she was trying to play and, you know, after taking out Sandra and whatnot, I just feel like she just fell into a position where her game's probably not going to be recognized unless she is sitting next to a Ben and a edge returnee that isn't sort of as respected in the game. So that's the only sort of way I see Denise winning. And, you know, when you put in, you know, her idol find and then taking out Sandra and then her two individual immunity wins or whatnot, like, I just think that can appear more impressive than it actually was. And for me, that's how it is with Denise.
You don't think the Sandra move was that impressive?
The Sandra move is amazing.
Yeah.
That's one thing that's
happened. But that's like one of the biggest moves in the game. Like, yeah, that's more than most people have done who aren't Tony.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, is that I just feel like socially Michelle beats her. I think strategically Sarah beats her, and it would take her to be sitting next to Ben to win. You can have the biggest move in the game, like the biggest move, and I'm not saying that is, but I'm just saying you can have the biggest move in the game on your resume and still not have played the best overall game.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the kind of thing we talk about when these edge players come back and make a move. And we're like, well, it's that one move. And Denise kind of had that earlier in the game, so it doesn't even have that, like, natural jury momentum, which is unfortunate. I feel like there was something happening where Kim was bringing the hyenas together last week, and it just fell apart this week. Now she's in a plan where, yes, she has Ben, but the other people in the plan are, like, again, people who probably beat her. I don't know if you really think Michelle has a social game to beat her, which probably is true. Again, hard to count the million votes, but if that's true, then she might be drawing a little bit dead, because the hyenas were all against each other in this episode, and that's to the credit of Tony and Sarah for being swing votes when they're the people who should be the biggest threats. So if that's true, and then she's obviously just taken out Nick, who's someone she probably could have beaten as well, and you know, yeah, she's still got, could she beat Michelle? Yeah, she's not in a great position for who she could beat on the jury.
No, and I look at her conversation at the well with Sarah and Ben, and I genuinely believe that she meant that. And that screams to me that she thinks that she can beat Sarah at the end, where if I was her, I would want to be sitting next to Nick and Ben at the end, and I'd be wanting to take out Sarah and Tony.
But then again, it's so hard because Ben and Nick are coming after each other. This vote and the last vote, Ben was with Nick, so...
That's where it's been so frustrating watching Ben play. It's like, oh, it's not all personal out there.
Yeah.
Play your game.
Yeah, I think that
this coming from someone who just had like the most personal season of all time.
Mm-hmm. That's what the problem is. You want to, Denise, can you just unite these people who are feuding and sit exactly next to the two people you can beat when no one else wants that dynamic to happen? Like, it's a really, really hard one. At least she knows she can't beat Tony. Like, at least she's trying to make something happen without Tony. But like, when is she expecting to get rid of Tony? Because even if she takes him to the final four, like, that's enough at this point. So it's not really a winning plan, even then. And even if she could beat Sarah, which maybe she thinks she has a better social game than Sarah, has a bigger move than Sarah, like, at least it's not Tony, but Tony's still as in the final four as Sarah is, and probably making fire against, you know, Sarah to be next to you anyway.
Agreed. You don't want to leave it too late, and I feel like she has on the Tony front.
Yeah, what about Jeremy's legacy? Well, you know, someone who had 9 lives in this game and finally was taken out. Might have actually made it had Nick not won immunity. That would have been crazy for him to make it through another tribal council. Where do you see where Jeremy sits as like a survivor player after all this?
I personally have Jeremy in like a top 10 player.
Mm.
Like comfortably. I just, everything about him, I love him from a TV aspect. I love him as a player. I think he's got the right amount of physical ability, the right amount. Or he oozes, I think, like personality, and you just want to be around him. And I think he's got enough sass, he's got enough savage in him, awareness. Like I just love Jeremy. I think he's fantastic. And as much as I'm disappointed to see him go out where he did, I kind of like that sort of positioning for him. A top 5 would have been ideal, but you know, he's lost nothing in my mind. I still think he's a great player.
Yeah, and it's hard when people are like, well, why would Jeremy win? He hasn't been on the right side of the boat. And it's like, okay, well, firstly, the underdog thing. Secondly, he's so likable. Thirdly, the story. Like, fourthly, he should not get there and he does. That's impressive. But like, mostly, those things are all reasons. It's like kind of intangible. It's like, just talk to the guy for 1 minute. You'll see why he needs to win. Like, it just like jumps off the screen for me, and it's something that almost can't even be quantified.
One thing that I've learned since playing, and that I didn't give any sort of awareness to or give any credit to. When I used to watch before I'd played, I used to just think like, hey, this person's been the most strategic. This person's been on the right side of numbers. This person is like, the likability factor is so, so, so big when you're out there. And like I mentioned, like, and this goes against everything that I sort of like try and stand for in Survivor, but when I was a personal trainer, there was a board of like 10 of us, and we have our pictures up and our quotes and what we live by and our qualifications. And not once did the person who had the most qualifications, who had been PT for the most years, they never once got picked first. The people that got picked first were the likable people, the people that come across like, you know, I like this person. And that's essentially what it's like out in Survivor. It's like you want to be likable rather than have the most credentials.
Yeah,
having both helps. Trust me.
Yeah, and I go back to Karong so much, and again, like that jury decision is weird to me. But like the one thing I couldn't get past from Michelle's win was like Aubrey. The move to get out Scott Pollitt is to me one of the best moves of all time. Like, in terms of resume, like, that to me stands out in history. And Michelle was on the wrong side of that vote, and I just thought, to compare someone who'd made a move like that compared to someone who was blindsided by that, I'm like, I cannot reward one thing over the other. And I still probably feel largely like that. Like, I'm still an Aubrey Truth in many ways, but, like, yeah, and there is so much more beyond that. And I think what's really hard for the viewer is it's so hard for us to see, because we're not there at camp, which is 95% of the game. You know, we're not seeing and feeling that social relationship, but we can count the numbers when, you know, someone's left out of the vote and someone makes a vote happen. So we don't get as much of what is like the fabric of the game in the social relationships, which can be hard as a viewer. But I think if we're just aware of it, then we can kind of understand the game more.
Totally. But I also feel like with the, because I feel like Aubrey was should have won personally.
Yeah, I was the same. But I love Michelle in this season.
As a viewer, oh, totally, totally. But like, this is why I also think is that not only did her moves all add up, like she was sold as the underdog. You know, the way that, you know, she struggled early on and then comes back and, you know, she's spitting at challenges to keep up with the, you know, the big boys and whatnot. Like, there's the underdog story to that. So she becomes likable. So not only has she done the thing strategically, but we as a viewer are liking her, and that's why we want her to win.
Yeah, I mean, that jury was really messed up. Like, that's a complicated one. It's not as binary as just, like, social versus strategic. There are a lot of factors to that. And also, by the end of that season, Michelle was the underdog, because at that point, Aubrey had worked himself up to a power position, and then Michelle had to win all the challenges to stay in, and then the juror removal, and she, like, had the momentum right at the end, which can be so important as well, as an edge returner is about to discover next week when they come in at the perfect time for the most important 4 days in the game to play 39 days of Survivor in half a week.
Agreed. Oh, God. I love so many of the edgies. I got such a crush on Natalie, and I really think her and Tyson are returning. And those two with Tony are like these three that I was so excited to watch this season. And I just feel like when they return, if they return, I'm just going to be rooting against them because I just hate it.
I also hate myself rooting against them. And I hate even, like, I don't want someone to come in who has an idol. So I'm, like, rooting against Natalie now in the challenge and Tyson, I guess, in Boston Rob. But, like, I want Natalie to come back and get voted out. But I want her to be validated for how well she's done on the edge. But, like, as a fan, I just don't want someone with an idol to come in. And then there could be an advantage getting, which is a distinct possibility. There'll be three idols in the game and an immunity coming up at Final Five. So, concerns. Great concerns in the next week.
Come on, Danny Underwood.
Stop putting that out in the universe. All right, but so before we get to the chizzy, 1 week left. Finale is next week. It's crazy stuff. Place your bets. Who do you have? Who is winning this? And that can be an Edge of Extinction returner, obviously, and if so, who? Or someone in the game?
I want Tony to win, but my money is on Michelle winning because Tony won't be in the final three.
My money is still on Tony. I think that I could see the Edge of Extinction person screwing that up. I think that person will be Natalie. I could definitely see Natalie winning. I think she has the edit for it. I think she has the pathway for sure, and she's not even in the game right now. I would have loved if they did that challenge so I didn't have to wonder. Like, I just want that variable to be closed, but I could see Natalie winning. I could see some others from the Edge winning. I could see Tyson possibly winning, but no one more than Natalie. But for Tony, like, the pathway to me is so clear. Like, he has Sarah and Ben who are not flipping on him. I feel like Denise is in that. He has the shield of the Edge of Extinction returner. He still has an idol, and he's definitely got the votes for me if he gets to the end. So I can't believe I am going into the final week of Survivor with Tony as my winner pick. That's crazy.
It's crazy to even think he's in the finale of Winners at War, to be honest.
I know.
If you're Tony, are you playing your idol at the next tribal council? Knowing that the returnee's there, and going to be spreading like wildfire that everyone's saying you're running the show.
I trust Tony's read so much. Like, I trust someone who made Nick into the majority of the split vote. Like, if you just put him on the Michelle vote when Jeremy went home, if you put him on the minority, he can't even flip. How much trust he had in Nick to not even do that? And correct trust, correct read. So I actually trust Tony's read so much. I think that he'll play it if he needs it. I think that if the returner...
Hang on. The question is, would you play it?
I'm not Tony Glovers. Like, I don't have the skill that he...
No, you have to say yes or no.
Who has won immunity?
He has. Who cares?
I think...
Not him. Not him.
Has the Edge of Extinction returner won immunity?
It doesn't matter.
I think if the Edge of Extinction returner is vulnerable, I wouldn't do it. I would expect... I mean, the thing is, they might have an idol. If there's an idol train, I'd do it. If the Edge of Extinction returner has an idol, I'd do it. But all things being pure, with that shield of the Edge of Extinction returner being vulnerable to be voted out, I wouldn't be playing my idol. I think that they would go home.
Okay, because he has massive kahunas if he holds that idol at number six.
I think if Parvati comes back, for example, I think she's got one of the best chances of the people who don't have an idol, and she does win immunity at six, I would be holding on to the idol. I think that they would stay strong with him, and I think they'd vote out Parvati.
Okay. And
did
my
I
next
answer that
question,
okay now?
Yes. I'll forgive you for fumbling around it. My next question is, does the person that returns from the edge get given an idol or a half an idol like Chris did?
No. I think they didn't give Tyson an idol when he came back at the merge. They did give it to Devons. I think the mechanism is you can buy your own, but we won't give one to you. We'll give you almost every other advantage coming back from the edge, but not actively give you an idol without you even buying it.
So what they're telling us is they've learned from their mistakes, but they haven't learned from their mistakes.
Yeah. They were like, all right, we shouldn't be giving them half an idol. We should be giving them a full idol if they can pay for it, which is in ways better, in ways maybe worse, but probably better. Like when Chris got that half idol, that's like my broken moment. That's why I didn't watch those Ponderosa videos, because that moment broke me. I was like, please just don't give him an idol. And they did, and I was up in arms about it. I still am a little bit.
When was he voted out? Day 12? Day 9?
I think it was day 9.
Yeah.
Third boot. Yeah. So and so he was in it for 9 days. Is that 1 week or 2 weeks?
I'm going to say that's half a week for me.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there's like time has lost all meaning. Definitely. We don't know. All right. Well, should we get to the chizzy?
Yes. Do you play some cool music or something?
Yes. Yes, I do. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Pella.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, the chizzy. AK, we've been going through some stuff on the podcast where we've been like, should we do 3 points first or 1 point first? What has more suspense? And ever since we had that discussion with my brother on the podcast, Tony has been just killing it. And the 3 points have had no suspense. I've been starting with 3 points. So you go first. What do you want to start with? 1 point or 3 points?
So hang on, I give only.
You give three, two, and one. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's still seven people in the game. And the edge. Okay. There's like 19 people in the game.
Okay, so sticking with my trend, I'm obviously going to give 3 points to Sandra.
You can't do that.
I love the way she raised that flag.
I almost gave her a chizzy point for that, for real, but you can't do that. You can't do that months later.
Okay. I'm going to give 3 to Michelle.
Okay. Okay, so, oh my God, 3 points was really suspenseful. We should have started on 1. But anyway, go ahead.
3 to Michelle. I just think that sometimes what you need in the game is for you to be stripped free of any planning that you thought was certain. And the fact that she got ripped of that with Nick's decision has allowed her to go, stuff it. I'm going to be sassy. I'm going to play a game that probably, if she had played from day one, she would have been even more celebrated. She won individual immunity, regardless of Ben's disadvantage, and with that, who's to say Ben wouldn't have knocked it over?
I know.
So you can't blame.
You actually don't know, do you?
Exactly. So she won that. She flipped the idol correctly, and like I mentioned, it looks so much more appealing. And had, you know what? She knew Jeremy's name was coming out. She still played it on herself. I like it. I really like it. Michelle's getting 3.
Yeah. Okay. It's 2 points and 1. Where are you going with it?
2 points goes to Team TV.
Mm-hmm.
How can you not? He's gone a whole 2 more tribal councils without his name coming up. He probably should be getting 3 votes, but I don't like going with the trend of things. So I think if he pulls this out and wins, You can't argue it's the greatest all-round Survivor product we've ever seen internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he doesn't win, I'll probably still feel that way.
True.
And 1 vote. It's got to be out of Denise and Sarah. Actually, do you know what? I'm going to give it to Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
Because, 1, she's one of my Survivor crushes. 2, just the ridiculous amount of tokens she's had, the ability to give Tyson an idol, knowing that's not going to backfire on her.
Mm-hmm.
and where she almost missed out on getting 1 point was she was feeding Tyson peanut butter. Don't give him any strength to beat you. But no, love Natalie. She was my winner's pick. She's my one true love. And yeah, I hope she comes back into the game and I hope she doesn't win, but I hope she does win, but I hope she doesn't.
Yeah, the spoonful of peanut butter, I think, was that one thing to prove Joey wrong, that they can be a selfless good deed. Like, the idol's for her, but the spoonful of peanut butter, that's just, that was actually being really kind.
No, don't. Something's up with that. Maybe she was hoping he gets diarrhea. Like, Joey Tribbiani's theory does not prove wrong.
And Joey doesn't share food. She was, like, all anti-Joey in this one moment. Like, doing everything he wouldn't love. All
right. Who are you giving votes to?
Okay. So 3 points, I'm going to be conventional. Give them to Tony. I've given 3 points to Tony for so long, I've actually lost count. And I've also lost all track of time. But for Tony, not targeted. He was a swing vote both times, kept his idol. I like both decisions, you know, to take out Jeremy there. The only fear is the hyenas coming, you know, for you. And then he's, you know, put the hyenas against each other so that that's definitely not a threat in the next vote. Votes out Nick, splits up Nick and Michelle, has a 4 going into the next final 6. I think he's in an incredible spot. And I have no complaints about anything that he did or he's doing. Unbelievable. 2 points I'm going to give to Denise. I really liked her wounded animal play, as I said. She could have been next out after Kim. I actually thought she might have been. She could have been the third option instead of Nick. And I think got herself out of that, not with a coin or with immunity, but actually with just, you know, her social play, to get out of being the target without an advantage or with immunity. I think is like, it's kind of an old school thing. It really is just that social game. And I think we saw that here. She's making active future plans. I don't know if she can win with them. As we've said, she has been a bit snookered. I don't know if there is a winning game for her there, but I think like within this, you know, maybe keeping Nick was vital in terms of going to the end with someone that she could beat with Nick and Ben. But again, it's just like they're not working together. Like those cards just aren't there for you to play. And she's playing the hand she's currently been dealt. Maybe it's not been great up till now in the last few votes to get her there. But I like things she was doing. I think against Michelle and Ben, if she could somehow do that, I wouldn't call it 100% a loss. I think she could maybe. She is still the Queen Slayer. I would probably think Michelle would win in that, but I wouldn't be 100% sure. So I don't think she's completely drawing dead. So that's worth 2 points to me. For a point, I'm going to give it to Natalie. Just the Tyson idol play was quite brilliant, as we said. I think she's coming back. I think she's the best on the edge. I want to validate that. So yeah, I couldn't really give to Michelle because, as I said, there was a lot that I loved that I've mentioned, but she was to be on the wrong side of both votes, to be the only one who was on the wrong side of both votes, just I couldn't reward it. And then for Sarah, even though she did so much great stuff, even though the way she incepted Ben was brilliant, it was like mind control. She was like, so Jeremy is with Tony. He's a number for Tony. We need to protect our numbers. And now you fill in the blank of who we should protect. Like, it was really brilliant. But her read is going in a very, very worrying way for me.
In a Sean direction.
I didn't want to say it, and I almost did, and then you said it. Then you said Sean direction.
We can speak openly on this podcast.
Yeah, it's just being heard by all the listeners. Anyone who chooses to listen to it. This is not a private space. Sorry if you thought it was. I can't with that line. I've heard too many. I'm taking Dave to the end, so I have to vote you out, Shawnee. And that was the exact same thing. It was like that picture of, like, you know, these two pictures are the same when Sarah said, I want to show my son I can beat the threats. It's like, your son doesn't care. He's 5 years old. He doesn't even know what's going on. He just watches what the challenge is.
It's so interesting to hear, like, what people are going into the game with, like, this burden on their shoulders sort of thing, like what they have to prove, like, and if people are talking down their win and what they have to do to... It's like, you won $1 million. Who cares? Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like, and if you're sitting next to Philip Shepherd at the end at Winners at War, who cares?
Yeah, you won Winners at War. Like, I've never got it, as I've said on multiple podcasts. You know, these two seasons, if it does go that way, it will break me, because I think I've done like almost 50 podcasts on these two seasons alone. I could not have been more in the weeds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you've done all these hours of podcasts for Danny Underwood? Oh, my goodness.
Don't even. This is why I didn't watch the Ponderosas. Like, this is why. But, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty in the weeds of both of these seasons, All Stars and Winners at War. Obviously, they overlapped. And And it's crazy when you see that similarity to the point where it's a near identical quote. It's just crazy. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. All right. Some questions from the listeners. Jason Gates, who is my brother slash intern, asks, how would you improve fire tokens in the game for another season? So we've talked about like a little bit of the letdown. I mean, this is, you know, when taking out the edge doesn't exist. How would you improve fire tokens in the game itself? Is there anything that you can think of that you would want to change or add or subtract?
I mean, if we're gonna make fire tokens a thing, like, let's make them a real thing where, you know, we have advantages that are expiring on the weekly, and where, you know, these fire tokens are expiring, and, you know, new batch are coming out, and I don't know, you win these fire tokens and you have 5 days to purchase something, or I don't know. It would have to be a big brainstorming session, but I don't mind them for what they've been, but I also really mind them for what they've been.
I feel
like I just said? I feel like I just said to you, I had a game that I didn't get to tell my story, and I'm not going to tell my story. Sorry, go on.
I think, yeah, that was a good podcast. I think that they need a board game designer and an actual economist to come on board and rework this. I've talked about the genius a little bit, I alluded to it, but they created an economy that was really, really complex and interesting and successful. You know, the garnets there, which are their fire tokens, they're public, so you know before the round, like, who has what. They really create a hierarchy in the game. They have value outside of the game, a monetary value. They create the prize money. There's inherent advantages and danger to having them. There's, like, a more measured inflation. There's just, like, a real economy to it. And I think the fire tokens was just like, okay, this will cost one, and now it'll cost one, and now it'll cost however much you want. Like, the inflation was so random. And I think that it needs to be way more measured, way more objective. There's a lot they can do to actually make this a thing rather than just feeling so unthoughtful in ways. There's other things, you know, just like when you find an idol, you go out into the woods, you find an idol, you have to pay for it. Like, that's something that could just make it weighty and kind of bring more social dynamics to, you know, to other parts of the game that we thought were just too random and too scavenger hunt. Like this could actually change that, or like, you know, they give you advantages in the immunity challenge. Just make it more comprehensive in how the whole game is played. I mean, the way that it worked from Edge of Extinction was it was just so specific. You could only use it if something was sent to you from the Edge. So without an Edge, hopefully they could actually make it comprehensive to the full game and actually work with more than just buying advantages off the Edge and stuff like that, and actually just really useful for every part of the game. Like, one thing that's really easy is the menus were really bad. The fact that Denise is having to buy rice, and the only thing they could have bought otherwise was basically a letter to the Edge or a reward steal when we didn't even see that many rewards. I mean, there might have been more that we didn't see, but like, the menus were terrible. So the first simple thing, overhaul the menus, and then overhaul the whole system, I think.
Do you feel better?
I do.
Okay, cool.
I do. All right, we've got more questions. Felipe Shimon asks, I want to know about the rocks. How many white and black rocks were in your jury question bag? So this is not a Winners at War question, obviously, but we want to know. We didn't get the deep dive. We want to hear what this was.
There was one white rock in my bag, and I was always going to draw that white rock at the voting booth, regardless of whether Sean said, yes, I want to gamble, or no, I don't. So she said she didn't want to gamble. And so then I drew that white rock out and I said, all you need to do is take one gamble in your game and you would have had my vote for $500,000. But if she had said, yes, she wants to gamble, I would have drawn that rock out and I would have said, don't you hate it when someone dangles so much hope in front of your face and then goes against what they said. So it was a lose-lose for her. It was never happening. But,
So you weren't voting for her anyway.
I was never voting for her, but the whole premise of my question was to sort of underdo and her whole game, which I explain in a deep dive that I have done, which will be released in the next month or so.
Cool. Question about that. Why did they not show your voting confessionals? Like what, like there was, we didn't get any of them in terms of like the jury confessionals.
The final vote for the winners.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have this theory that all season long, they only showed certain extended tribals and the other ones that they didn't sort of protected certain people. That's my theory behind that.
Interesting. I thought it was because Jonathan had written the votes from LA and they didn't match your votes. And that was my theory.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is that what he did?
I don't know. Oh. I honestly wouldn't be able to tell you.
Well, maybe it's still true. Okay, keep hope alive. Ron Collison asks, there is now a ton of souvenir fire tokens in the main game. Should there have been a mechanism for players to gift their remaining fire tokens, perhaps cap to say two per main game player, to people on Edge of Extinction, could mix up the dynamics at the reintegration point and counter the bias that long-term inhabitants have in finding tokens? So Michelle could gift her tokens to Jeremy, for example. Or Nick, I guess. Well, I don't know if she would at that point, but this could be cool. Would hand a little bit of the power back to the players who are still in the game.
Yeah, how cool would that be? But like, you know, Boston Rob has one advantage with his two tokens, but Michelle has handed him four tokens and will receive another advantage. And then if he gets back in the game, it's like another dynamic. I like it.
Yeah, and I think that as well, when the edge player comes back, it's so uncontrollable from the players. So at least this gives them a little bit of control. It's like the best person to come back to me would be this person and I can influence that. And I've worked to get the tokens. That would be a cool payoff. At least there would be something to do with it.
That could be on the menu.
Yes.
Aid someone's return.
Yes. Okay, see, the menu now is already better. That's already way better than sending a letter. Like, they just needed to go that one step, you know, different. And if you've, you know, kept tokens or gained tokens in some way, you can kind of put your foot on the scale of the challenge for someone that you like, or you get jury votes from it or something like that. Like, at least it's something that you've earned and it gives power to the people in the game over the edge. I'm obsessed with this idea.
Great suggestion.
All right. So Joshua Aaron Harkness says, if Ben wins final immunity, should he give that up to knock Tony out in fire?
100%. Does it win him any votes on the jury? 0%.
I mean, Chris Underwood did it.
Yeah, that's a he had the advantage of winning everyone's hearts at Edge. I think Ben's done nothing but annoy people.
I think the thing that's hard with Ben is like he's drawing dead, so like why not? You've got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
But it's hard to know, like it's hard to read your game as like, well, I'm drawing dead. Like that's
but also spot. But also, if he knows he's drawing dead and he really likes Tony, he might want Tony to win.
But he doesn't know he's drawing dead as well. So.
But that's the thing. Like, what was his name? Is it Keith? Like, he had to know he was drawing dead against Adam and who was the other one in Williams vs. Gen X?
And Hannah, yeah.
Like, he had to know. Like, he had to keep David in that game because he liked David more. Let David win.
But he didn't know. That's the whole point. Is like, I think it must be really, really hard to be a Survivor player who's drawing dead. And we're like, just know that you have put all this effort into this thing you have no chance in succeeding at. Like,
exactly.
I don't blame the players for, you know, that's a very invalidating feeling. Like, I don't blame the players for not knowing that they're drawing dead. That would be really, really psychologically difficult.
Yeah. And there's only been one contestant I've spoken to in Australian Survivor that openly admits that at final six they knew they were drawing dead and they can't believe they allowed to get to that position.
I think some people maybe think I don't have a great shot, but like, what are you doing if you think like you've got no chance. So I think for Ben, like, you know, yes, he's drawing dead. I would like for Ben to think, I don't have much of a shot, but I can improve it maybe by making fire, impress some people. Like, that's my superpower, right? Like, I'm the fire person. I have to show my merit in the game. I've now found an idol. Like, this is what I do. I know he's been trying to change that, but old habits die hard.
Yeah.
I would like to see it. I think that, yeah, I mean, I think that he should do something impressive and speak to one of the reasons he's a winner, that fire superpower. I mean, I wouldn't like it if he beat Tony in fire. But in terms of like, him as a player, that would really suck for me, though. Okay, last question. Talking TV asks, as a DJ, how would AK improve the Winners at War song?
Oh, God. Do you know what? Like, actually, it doesn't bother me. It actually, like, doesn't faze me one bit. But if we could put, like, I don't know, a bit of Sandstorm by Darude in the background behind it, just to give it a bit more gusto, then let's go with that.
What can we offer you to sneak it into the playlist for an upcoming wedding?
What, that the
Winners at War song? Yeah.
Oh, I'll do it 100%. If someone wants to send me the link via Twitter, I'll do it and I'll film myself playing it at a wedding, like, no worries at all.
Okay,
I have this thing with photographers at every wedding, and a lot of the ones I work with regularly love coming to me before I even bring it up. But I play this thing called You Wouldn't, and they have to give me one song that, like, surely you wouldn't play that at a wedding. So they'll come to me with a song, and I'll make sure at some point throughout the night I sneak it in.
Wait,
so,
well, give me an example of the song. Besides the Winners at War theme song.
Yeah, but like, it's not going to be the entire song. It's not going to be 5 minutes or 4 minutes.
Yeah, I think there's only a couple of lines, so don't worry about that.
Yeah, I'm going to, you send me that link, I'll make sure I fit it in.
Okay, well, I feel like this is a ringing endorsement for your DJ services. Like,
probably not. Like, yeah. I'm just willing to play a song that shouldn't be played at a wedding, at your wedding.
Is it like a very inappropriate song? Like, why is it?
I won't do any swear words, but just like, I don't know, something, I don't know, Limp Bizkit or just anything cool.
Our first dance song was from Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. So I feel like there's no level of randomness. Like, some couples might want something a little weird.
That is very, very obscure.
Yeah.
But I like it. It obviously means something to you.
It does. It does. And it definitely was different. It was actually a Backstreet Boys Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat mashup. I'm not
How good.
Yeah. Do you think anyone else has ever done that? You do a lot of weddings. Has anyone else ever done their first dance for that combination?
Probably only like 6 or 7 weddings.
Mm-hmm. That would kill me.
Yeah.
This is the most popular mashup we've had this year.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, that's what's trending in 2020.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Anyway, I don't know how we got to this point, but
okay. I love that for you, by the way. I wish I had been there to play. No,
I'll send you the video. You know, we got to do a band at the Jewish wedding. But, you know, for the listeners, AK is the reason we found our videographer. So
if you like,
so helpful.
If you like Shannon's wedding video, you can thank me.
Yes, and it's great. And we're actually getting all the other videos this week, so I'll let you know how thankful we are. But he was amazing. Anyway, AK, what is the hashtag to this off the rails podcast we're currently at? I love hashtag what would Tony do. I feel like that's like a good mantra.
I love Danny Underwood.
No. Fine, do it. Do it.
Yes.
The hashtag. But I want you to know that I put out a summoning circle the day that the cast flew to Fiji for Tony to win. And it could work. And then I would genuinely be concerned about my powers. Like, with great power comes great responsibility, and I would be a witch. So
didn't
your
you
thing
do
might
this,
work.
Didn't you do this for Nick Iodanza, and he didn't
Did
even make merge?
To, well, to be fair, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I can only help so much. Like, then you have to also... No, I think if Tony wins, that's 100% me. Like, this is an impossible scenario, and I have no other reason this could have happened.
100% you.
Yeah, so you'll do your magic thing, and I'll do my magic thing, and we'll see whose magic works next week.
Okay, come on, Danny.
AK, where can people find you online? Tweeting about the show a little bit here and there?
Yeah, I'm off Instagram. I'm trying to live that Spencer-starred life. So, yeah, you can catch me on Twitter. I generally only tweet about Survivor every so often.
That's what people want.
Yeah. But I do like engaging with people on Twitter. It's fun. So, Yeah.
That's where you can post a video when you do the Winners at War theme song at a wedding.
Yes, and I will. I definitely will. Honestly, if someone sends me the link, let's do it. Have fun.
Well, you guys can follow me at Shannon Gates on Instagram and Twitter. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, which is, I mean, there's still content coming out, but who knows where we go after next week. There's like a pre-Survivor and post-Survivor world we're living in, and I don't want to think about what's on the other side of that door, so I'm not. Next week, the finale, I will be chatting to Nick Iadanza, aforementioned Nick Iadanza, about the whole season, so you guys can check that out. But otherwise, this is all I got. AK, thank you so much for coming on to chat with me.
Now go watch that Ponderosa.
No. I don't. I hate that I admitted that. I feel like it kills the completionist in me and the Survivor fan in me, and that's literally my two largest personality traits. It's bad. All right. Well, on that depressing note, AK, thank you so much. This was super fun. Thank you, Scott St. Pierre, behind the scenes. Thank you to all you guys for listening, and we will see you for the finale podcast next week. Winners of War coming to an end. Hashtag Jannie Underwood, but hashtag Team TV as well. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the middle.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekel.
Million.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.